Blog Talk Radio.
In Dallas, Texas, on Sunday, August the 12th. As we like to do on Sundays, we'll be checking with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. A lot to get into this week, the primaries, the special election. On Tuesday, there's this young woman up in Ohio, in the Bronx, you know, Evita, the Evita that Bill always talks about. She doesn't want to debate Ben Shapiro, which I find fascinating, but then not long ago, she was criticizing her Democrat opponent for not debating I find that, am I the only one who's not surprised? A bunch of editorials, I guess, are getting together against President Trump. I don't like that, but it is the way it is. Should we put troops in Chicago? I think that's the big question that everybody's asking. I'm not sure. I certainly would encourage the governor of Illinois to do it, maybe in conjunction with the president. I don't know, but something's got to be done about what is happening in that city. It's obvious to me that the Democrat leadership in that city has lost control of the city. I just don't know what else to say. They were going to take down the Pledge of Allegiance. I guess they put it back in Atlanta. We're going to talk a little bit about that, because a country that forgets its history is a country that will eventually disappear, it seems to me. Generic polls, you know, this is that poll that they take asking people whether they want a Republican or a Democrat. They've been up, they've been around 6 or 7 points, I guess, sometimes as high as 10, favoring Democrats. But all of a sudden here in the last couple of weeks, they've tightened up quite a bit, almost a within the margin of error election. What does that mean? I'm not sure, but it's good news for the Republicans, at least for the time being. Senator Harris, this is the young lady from, or the young woman from California, who I think wants to be president, but she's going to have to come up with a resume. So far, she doesn't have one at all. Another young woman in the news, Omarosa, I think that's her name, and she apparently recorded some conversations in the White House. I think that's highly improper, but these days, I guess anything goes, particularly when Trump is a target. Let me say hello to our friend Bill Katz in New York. Bill, it's humid and raining here. How about there?
It is very much the same here, of intense humidity. I mean, it's we are in a cloud thicker than that embracing the Democratic Party. It's very, very, very humid here, and it was an article that we're in some sort of a weather cycle. It's going to stay humid. There's going to be a lot of gloopiness.
And it was all predicted by Al Gore, Bill.
Absolutely predicted by Al Gore, and Gore is now blaming Donald Trump for it.
Why not blame Trump? Everybody else blames him for everything, which is pretty remarkable. Bill, I just wanted to quickly mention something that you probably remember a lot. It was on this day, 1961, that the Berlin Wall, or they began the construction. They didn't finish it until a year later. But I think people like me who grew up in that time, the Berlin Wall was like, you know, this place where you could see freedom and communism, you know, on both sides. Of course, it came down in 1989, but I don't even know if we teach stuff like that anymore, Bill. I don't know, but let's never forget the Berlin Wall, Bill.
That's right. The Berlin Wall became a symbol of communism because it was a wall that was designed to keep people in rather than to keep people out. I mean, they built it in order that people did not escape to West Berlin from East Berlin. This was in the era when when Germany was divided and the East was controlled by the Soviet Union. Mm-hmm. It was built in 1961. It came down in, I believe the year was 1989.
89, yeah.
Yes, the reason it was built originally, or at least one reason, we shouldn't be absolute about this, one reason was that Kennedy, in his first months in office, was very weak on foreign policy. It was very surprising because we expected him to be very strong. He did learn lessons, and those lessons were applied to the Cuban Missile Crisis successfully, but he was very weak. He messed up the Bay of Pigs, and then he went to a conference with Nikita Khrushchev, the General Secretary of the Soviet Union, and he was rolled by Khrushchev very badly and knew it. And that was good that he knew it. You know, you're not going to win unless you know when you're losing. He knew he was losing. And Khrushchev took these as signs of weakness. The wall was begun, and Kennedy did not interfere with the construction of the wall. He may have protested it. And this sense and perception of Kennedy as a weak president persisted. And there are people who feel that is why Khrushchev tried to put missiles in Cuba, that he didn't think Kennedy would resist. He was wrong on that. It came down in 1989. Now, of course, to the political left in America, the fact that it came down was all a coincidence. You know,
right,
it was all a coincidence.
Right.
It happened that they needed the space for a parking lot.
That's right.
Now, the real reason it came down is that there were changes that were being forced by the United States and our allies, Margaret Thatcher and Pope John Paul II, who, as a triumvirate, changed history, and the satellite system collapsed. The Soviet Union was no longer in charge of these satellites, and the people of Berlin, through their own actions, literally did take down the wall brick by brick. It was a dramatic scene.
Oh, yeah.
The intellectuals rushed out and said, oh, this would have happened anyway, you know? Happened anyway. The low crime rates in New York would have happened anyway. Everything would have happened anyway. And also, the economy today would have happened anyway, because it's really Barack Obama's economy. I don't recall him ever doing anything. But it's really Barack's. That's what it is.
Of course, and the Berlin Wall, at least to me, symbolically, for all those years, I mean, it seemed like you always, whenever I thought of the Berlin Wall, I always thought of communism and freedom. I mean, it was such a contrast. On one hand, like you were saying, on one side, you were keeping people in East Germany so they couldn't get out. And the minute they could get out, they all ran out, Bill, which is,
yes.
I'm sure, another coincidence, too. Another coincidence, but I don't know. I just hope we never stop teaching it.
Definitely.
You know, I just my whole point about this is I hope we never stop teaching what that Berlin Wall meant.
Well,
I hope we teach it.
I don't know if we do. It's every time I read an article about what is being taught in American schools, it's shocking because of what is not being taught in American schools.
Right.
And the school system and certainly the universities have been taken over by the left, and I would be surprised if it is taught. I would be surprised.
Well, that's
if it
a shame.
Taught.
And that's
and
a
look,
shame.
You see that reflected in the way the news is covered and the way the news is discussed. I mean, what is hilarious if you follow, as we both do, the news, is how the Democratic Party now claims to be so anti-Russian. The last time I looked, under the administration of Field Marshal of the United States, Barack Obama, he was conceding everything to the Russians. And they went into the Crimea, the Crimea. Oh, be our guest, you know? I mean, we didn't mean to keep you out. 8 years ago, do you remember any Soviet troops in the Middle East? I don't. Now they
no,
are
I don't.
Or Russian troops. Well, they're all over the Middle East now, and he didn't seem to have a problem. And when Mitt Romney, during the 2012 election campaign, brought up Soviet expansion, Barack Obama, during the debate, ridiculed him. I mean, you're living in the past. The Democrats came out with a slogan, the Republicans, the 1980s are calling, and they want their foreign policy back. Now, all of a sudden, Trump is not tough enough on Russia. Well, in fact, he's a lot tougher than Obama ever was. That's for sure. But it is remarkable how people have absolutely no shame. No shame at all.
No, I know what you mean, because I remember that debate between Governor Romney and President Obama, and And I was pretty furious at the Democrats because I kind of felt the same way Romney did when he said that. And he's turned out to be totally prophetic on that remark that he made. I wanted to make a quick point. We were talking off the air about the Pledge of Allegiance down in Atlanta. They were going to take it down, I guess, they took it down. They sent out a letter, but I guess they reversed their decision because people exploded. I'm glad to see that people exploded. I like to see more explosions, frankly, Bill, of
yes.
parents saying enough is enough. I mean, stop, you know, rewriting the history. I mean, it's okay to talk about the mistakes that were made, but do we have to throw the baby out with the water? So I'm glad the parents stood up to the school board, because the school board is crazy to suggest that, you know, the Pledge of Allegiance is going to offend somebody. As I was telling a friend of mine yesterday, I mean, if you're offended by the Pledge of Allegiance, you might want to live in another country. I mean, I'm getting really fed up with this stuff, Bill.
Oh, I am too, and I think most Americans are. I think if you look at public opinion polls, even Democrats are fed up with this stuff already. You know, they say, well, we've noticed in our school that in recent years fewer and fewer children are standing for the Pledge of Allegiance. Well, that, to me, was the story that
mm-hmm.
should have been reported by the press. Why are fewer and fewer children standing for the Pledge of Allegiance? Somebody told them not to. That's why.
Right.
They didn't do this on their own, but the press will not go anywhere near it. I assume race was involved, and they said, well, we want to be more inclusive and including the people who don't want to stand, so none of us will stand. Now,
right.
I've got a question for these clowns. Why not be inclusive toward the people who do stand and
mm-hmm.
say, you can stand, but of course you can also sit if you wish. We will not interfere, so both can be served. But that was not what it was about. It was about the left moving in and trying to change our habits. Now, there was a
right.
big uproar, and they are putting the pledge back. But what it tells you is what is happening to our schools, who is doing
mm-hmm.
the teaching, what is being taught. And I think many Americans are concerned, but they do not have a press that is concerned. You
yes,
don't see
well,
this in the mainstream media at all.
No, you don't. And I, to me, I just found this whole thing so objectionable. Look, if... but what I was talking to my friend about yesterday is that some people, I guess, object to the line, a nation under God. Well, you don't actually
yeah.
have to say that.
No,
you don't
require it at all.
Exactly. I mean, so if you stand up and, you know, you put your hand on your over your heart and you're reading the Pledge of Allegiance, and if you don't want to say a nation under God because somehow you find that offensive, well, okay, you don't have to say that. And who's going to even know that you don't say that? But to take it all down, I mean, I'm just getting so angry with this effort to destroy the history of the United States. And, you know, at one time I thought, well, these people are ill-informed or they're not a threat. Right now I'm beginning to think that our school system is a threat to our national security because we're training a bunch of young people to believe that this is the worst country that on earth, Bill.
And that is the purpose of it. You know, this is a reflection of what has gone on in this country for about 60 years, and that's the reaction to Joe McCarthy. I've always said he was the most important
mm-hmm.
figure in the latter part of the 20th century in the United States because the left used him so effectively. And when once McCarthy arose and then was brought down, by the way, by Republicans, not by Democrats,
mm-hmm.
but any time you try to point to leftism and what it was doing, you were called a McCarthyite. And many people didn't want to take that risk. You see it again today with the word racist. I mean,
mm-hmm.
or the word misogynist, or the word, what other words? Other words like
well,
it.
Well, you can take your pick, whatever word ends in ISM
exactly.
they're using, Bill. Yeah, sexism,
yes,
sexism, whatever. Now,
yes,
you
yes
know,
our
so,
little Evita here in New York, or as we call her, Bolshechik, is... That's there's a contest, you know, on the internet as to what we should label her. And the two top names that have come out, as far as I'm concerned, are Bolshechik and Che Guevara.
I like that one.
Yes.
But one thing we cannot call her, Bill, is successful at endorsing candidates.
No,
she got a real problem there.
Yes, her name is her last name is Cortez, and they're now
right.
calling it the Curse of Cortez.
That's right.
And it's, you know what it is it's sad because she's a fine young woman. She really is. And
sure.
She's very attractive. She's very bright. She graduated fourth in her class at Boston University. But she's so unprepared. And they're not doing her any favors by putting her on national television. She's becoming an object of ridicule. When you are in the big leagues, you have to play big league ball. And she's not ready to play big league ball.
Well, she doesn't want to do this debate with Ben Shapiro. And I find that to be really silly. Because
yes.
I would think that if you're, you know, whatever your point of view is, that you would, you know, love to have the exposure. I think she's afraid that Ben Shapiro is going to ask her one question, Bill. Can you name a successful socialist country? And I don't think she can answer that.
Oh, Ben Shapiro would put her away in about 30 seconds. It wouldn't even be close. But, you know,
right.
It's very interesting that when he made this offer, he offered her $10,000 for her cause if she would debate him. Come on his program and debate him. And she said, that's the equivalent of catcalling, which is an absurd statement. Now, what is catcalling? Catcalling is construction workers whistling at girls who pass. There are now cartoons out depicting construction workers yelling at young women passing by, hey, baby, you want to debate?
That's great. That is fabulous. I've got to see that. That is really great. But it was not a good night overall for Bernie Sanders or this young woman. I mean, they're candidates.
Yes.
And, you know, and I actually think that's a good sign for the Democrats, because the more they avoid people like Bernie Sanders, who's not even a Democrat, by the way, as you know, and
of
this
course.
Young woman, the more they avoid them and the further away they can get away from these people, the better for the party, I think, if they want to be able to govern successfully, Bill.
Well, that's absolutely true, and the fact of the matter is that Bernie Sanders' endorsement and the young woman's endorsement have become the kiss of death.
Yes.
Everybody that they endorse loses.
Right. Well, but you know, and this was across the country, not just in one place. I mean, and they were in just about every place they had a primary. That he went 0-5 or 0-6. Now, President Trump had technically a good night because he won. But the results in Ohio were probably closer than they should have been. But I actually think that's what happens in these special elections. You know, we had a special election in Texas a couple of weeks ago, Bill, where we had to replace a Democrat member, a Democrat state senator who had gotten in some legal trouble. And a Republican won that district, becoming the first Republican ever to win that Senate seat. These special elections have a way of doing that, Bill.
Yes, that's why they call them special.
Yes.
They're not real elections. And the one up in Ohio, that was that you referred to, which was a close call, and it was a Republican district. It should have been won easily. But, you know, when you look at when the election was held, it was August. People aren't concentrating on politics. I think a lot of it's now been shown statistically that a lot of Republicans stayed home, not because they didn't want the Republican to win, but they thought, well, it's because the Republican district will win anyway. But also another thing that's very, very interesting about that particular election is it wasn't the real election. Now, I knew it was a special election. I knew it was to replace a congressman who had resigned. And in a special election, you hold it to fill out his term. And it struck me the night before the election, wait a minute, his term, because he's a member of the House of Representatives, would be up in January. This is like for 4 months. I don't recall anybody saying that. Only after the election did they point out that they're going to rerun this in November with the same candidates.
Right.
In
November, it'll be a different game because,
very
for one thing,
game,
the Democrats are not going to be able to focus. The problem with these special elections is that they focus exclusively on the election. They basically go out and raise money exclusively for the election. So they're putting in resources they're not going to put in November. And that, of course, makes it more difficult for them. But the bottom line is they've lost 8 of 9 special elections, and I'm not saying you shouldn't take them seriously, but they've lost 8 of 9, Bill, except this one in Pennsylvania, where they ran the most pro-Trump Democrat that they could find, Bill.
That's right. That's another thing. Some of these Democrats who are running, you would not know they were Democrats.
That's
I mean, this fellow who ran against The winning candidate in Ohio,
right.
The Republican candidate.
Bernardo,
oh,
was it, or something like that?
I don't know. O'Connor was his name.
Yeah, O'Connor.
A fine
yeah.
young man, but he always seemed to be interviewed in the church.
That's right.
I'm in church, and
right.
he seemed to have moved in
right.
to demonstrate that. Now, another one who is really, who you know, is beginning to concern me a little bit, it's your state, is Beto O'Rourke. Who seems
yes.
to be doing well in the polls. I think for several reasons. One is he is a, even though he's as deceptive as can be, he is a real liberal. But he apparently is running as a man of the people.
Right.
Ted Cruz is a tremendous asset to the Senate. He's not the most attractive personality.
No.
And I think that is having its impact. It's too bad because apparently in person he is a very decent man. But he comes across as very schoolmarmish. In the sense of lecturing people, but he is brilliant. You know, he was a student of Alan Dershowitz at Harvard, at the Harvard Law School, and Dershowitz said he was one of the best students he ever had. But he doesn't agree with him, but he has a brilliant mind.
Right. I'll go on record right now, Bill, as saying that Ted Cruz will win by ten points,
so.
And that Abbott will win by 15. It's very difficult, and you know, it's very difficult for me to believe these polls. For one reason, if you look at the primary on the day that people actually went to vote, it was like 2-1 in favor of Cruz. Cruz got twice as many votes as Beto did. So I just have a hard time believing that Beto and that the people of Texas have become that liberal in 3 months. So it's just to me, these are polls. I mean, you gotta take them seriously. I'm kind of glad that Cruz is really. Focusing on running a hard campaign, but I think you'll win by 10. There's just no way. There's a videotape that came out. A friend was telling me that there's a videotape that came out of Beto O'Rourke apparently attacking the Catholic Church, and it wasn't that long ago. So we'll see when that one hits the airwaves. There's also some things that he said about the NRA that I think will not help him in Texas. But I think Cruz will win by 10, it'll be 55-45, and I don't really see how it can be anything else, Bill. But that's just my thought sitting here in Texas.
I read some things in the last week, and I can't remember the specifics. That there's some evangelical spokesman coming into Texas to speak against him. That he had made some anti-Israel statements. O'Rourke did.
It's
and,
possible.
Yes, and the evangelicals are very pro-Israel. You know, his name isn't Beto, which
no.
it's another one.
That,
you can't even
that,
get
that
the names
you
of the
everything.
Candidates. You can't even get the names of the candidates right anymore. It's going to be a brutal election season, and now I see that the press is ganging up there. They're all getting together, not all, but a number of them, under the leadership of the Boston Globe, which is about as liberal a newspaper as you'll find in this country, and they're going to attack Trump. For his attacks on the press. Now, what is remarkable about this is, first of all, it's unethical. Each newspaper should have its own editorial opinion and should do things in its own way. But also, he wasn't attacking the press. He was attacking the press's behavior. He wasn't attacking the notion of a free press. And look, I'm not, you know, as we've said on this broadcast many times before, Trump is not a perfect person by any means.
No.
He has a number of defects. He is, you know, not the best messenger for our message, but he's the president we've got, and he's been very, very effective thus far. But something
That's right.
is going to come out. Something. When the election is now 2.5 months away, it's really whizzing toward that day.
Yes,
something
it is.
Will come out right before the election, and it's going to come out from Mueller or people around Mueller. It may turn out to be a bust. But it's going to come out, and we have to brace ourselves. The Republican Party has to be ready. I get the feeling they are pretty well organized. But they've got to have their ground game in place on Election Day. They've got to bring those voters out, and Trump has got to go everywhere and say you must vote on Election Day. It's the only poll that counts, and don't be confident. Go out and you know. He may say things times in an abrasive and crude manner, but he's a terrific motivator. I mean, he motivates his base, and people have said this week, Karl Rove did, several others, Cal Thomas, criticizing him, saying, you know, Mr. President, just lighten up on the attacks on the opposition and go out and sell your message. And I think he should. I think he should go out, be very positive about his accomplishments, say, you've got to help me help the country, because if the other side wins, all this is going to be taken away from you. And I think that we may just squeeze out a victory in November. I don't know if the Democrats will take control of the House. Nobody does. But it's possible that we can cut our losses and they will not take control, or they might take control. I'm much more concerned about the Senate, because the House without Senate is, you know, it's like a horse without a carriage. You can't pass a bill without both houses. You have Trump to veto anyway. But I'm concerned about the Senate, because the Senate is where judges are confirmed. And the great accomplishment of Donald Trump, aside from building a great economy, will be that he will change the nature of the American judiciary and move it in a more conservative and constitutionalist direction. That will not happen if the Democrats take control of the Senate. I don't think they will. I think it'll be close. But there are a couple of Democrats in trouble. Republicans in trouble in Senate races, and they're beginning to be concerning. One is in Nevada. Another is in Arizona, which, by the way, is moving sadly in the Democratic direction because of population changes. And the the candidate for the Senate in the probable candidate in the Senate on the Democratic side is a very I'm familiar with her. She's a very deceptive figure. She has a history of being on the very far left. Suddenly she's turned into a moderate, you know, to win elections. But if she ever got to Washington as a U.S. senator, you know, it's going to be a very bad thing.
Yeah, I saw a list of polls today of the different elections, and that one, the average polls, as they like to call it, that one, the Democrat is winning, but by less than half a point. So it's all within the margin of error. I do believe that President Trump is committed to going district by district, state by state, if necessary, in much the same way that he closed the general election. So I think we're going to see him out there quite a bit, and that energy, I think, will translate into a big turnout. But there's no question the Democrats are also going to have a big turnout. So it's just a question about we just have to turn out more than they do, Bill. And
I think we can.
It's just a matter of time before we see the results. Bill, let me take a little break. When we get back, we'll continue our conversation with Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda.
This is Carlos Guedes Harpiz. I would like to see you guys this Saturday night at Sisiki's at the Star, located at 6765 Winning Drive in Frisco. I'll be performing instrumental high-energy music at 6:30 until 9:30 p.m. Make your reservation today at 972-377-2276. Remember, Sisiki's at the Star is the place to hang out on Saturday night. For upcoming dates, look for me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
And we have a link to Carlos on the show information right under the show description. You'll be able to link or go to his Twitter or Facebook account and see where he's playing around town. He does a great job. Great friend of our show, and we just love to work with him here in the Dallas area. Let's get back to our friend Bill Katz. We were just talking about the election, Bill, before the break, and I wanted to bring up the fact that these what they call the generic poll has pretty much gotten almost – there was one even that had them tied. So it's really within the margin of error what that means for November, I don't know. But right now, based on that poll, it looks like the Republicans can be competitive, Bill.
It does look that way. That it's a pretty good poll. Of course, the polls that will really count, the pre-election polls that will really count, will be the ones taken after Labor Day, when people start to concentrate on the election, start to concentrate on their choices, and then you may see a lot of changes. We don't know. And again, the national press will be operating full steam on behalf of the Democratic Party. There's no question about it. That is, when Trump talks about fake news, he's right. I mean, they you know what's going to be published is what's going to help their party and their cause. It is going to be a tough fight. I think the Republicans are up to it in many cases. I think that they are also energized, not as much as the Democrats, but they may be as energized on Election Day. And I think that the fears that Trump will hurt them, I think, have dissipated. It turns out that when he endorses somebody, they do better.
Right. No, that's what happened on Tuesday. I mean, he endorsed the fellow in Kansas, and he did better than expected. But I just think he brings a lot of energy. He doesn't like to lose. He's a winner. And while
yes,
I agree
right.
with you that sometimes his personality drives me crazy, I mean, this whole thing with the media, I wish he wouldn't be I wish he wouldn't talk about it as much.
That's right.
Because the media gives him all the material he needs with all the fake news. I mean, he doesn't even have to bring it up. I mean, the media gives him plenty of material. So but I think sometimes he knows, and this is just my sense, I think he knows that when he goes into one of these rallies, the people at that rally are loving these attacks on the media. So I think he's just giving it to them. I think
he feeds off the crowd.
He does, and he's giving the information. I wish he wouldn't, frankly, because, for example, what happened to Jim Acosta, I think Jim Acosta is a clown, but I wish people had not done that to him when he was there that day. I think there are better things to do with your time than getting into a fight with Jim Acosta, but it's happening. People are angry. People are angry at the media, and, Bill, I understand why. People are fed up with a media that they believe is one-sided. I mean, so I understand that, Bill.
Well, look, I think that the polls on the media are very interesting. I think that they show, you know, what is actually out there. And I think that if I were in the media as a professional, which I was at one time, I would not take these. I would not take these polls lightly. I would take them seriously, and say our profession is in trouble, and we have to do the best we can to get it out of trouble, which means putting out a better product, a more fair product, and a much more thorough product. And I just don't think they're interested. I really don't. I think this has a lot to do with generations. I think it has a lot to do with the fact that the people in the media now, running the media now, are the 60s generation or the children of the 60s generation. And I think they were infected by that craziness and that kind of, you know, anti-Americanism. Of course, when you say that, they get all huffy-puffy and they say, we're Americans like anybody else. Yeah, but they, you know, they don't like the country, and most Americans do like the country. And I think that they're pursuing their own interests in the worst possible way.
Yeah. Well, a good example of this, Bill, is this young woman. Amarosa, is that her name? Whatever her name is, I think it's Amarosa, isn't it? That's what she goes by. But she goes to the, I mean, she makes a recording, I guess, in the White House, secretly makes a recording. And there's, you know, Meet the Press immediately brings her in and says, hey, let's play the recording. I would think that if I was a serious member of the media, you know, there's any serious member of the media would say, no, we're not going to peddle people. We're not going to talk to people who are peddling a recording that was not ethically. I mean, no one should have to defend a recording that was made in secret, Bill. I really don't believe that.
I think that's true. And also, she said that the recording was made in the White House Situation Room, which is an especially egregious act if she did it, because that is where the information is the most classified. I would also imagine, I do not have direct information on this, but just putting two and two together, that she probably lied when she said that it was made in the Situation Room, because the Situation Room has got to have electronic detectors that would pick up the electronic circuitry of a tape recorder. I mean, of all places in the world to have it, it would be there. And I would imagine you couldn't use a tape recorder without it being detected. Look, she's obviously a lowlife. And it can be legitimately asked, why did Donald Trump employ her all these years? She was a candidate or a contestant, I guess it would be, on The Apprentice when he was The Apprentice host on television. He fired her, you know, symbolically on the air, then hired her for his company. I have no idea why. He hired her for the White House. It didn't work out, and they fired her. There were all kinds of reports of very bad behavior on her part. I don't know if they're true. And now she's getting back at him. And she said, I was complicit in this hoax that he is qualified to be president. He's mentally deteriorated. For a man who's mentally deteriorated, he certainly ran an effective campaign. I mean,
sure.
He's a racist and all that. Well, you know, I mean, if you thought he was a racist, why did you work for him all that
That's
time?
Right. That's right.
I think this, like all the other sensational attacks on Trump, will go away. That doesn't mean it won't do some damage. It might in the short run. But I think that, you know, the press is building up to the hope that there will be an impeachment. They mm-hmm. pray. I think they go to the whatever house of worship they go to, or house of non-worship, or house of print that they go to. They are praying for the Democrats to win so there will be an impeachment and that they can force him out of office. Even, you know, remember, Nixon was actually never impeached. People think he was. He was not. He was pressured to resign and so as not to put the country through it. Clinton was impeached and was exonerated in the Senate. And, of course, he had the press on his side because he was a Democrat. And one can question the wisdom of the Republicans in impeaching him, although he did do some things like lying to a grand jury that were inappropriate. I would imagine that if the Democrats take over, that the Congressional Black Caucus will demand that he be impeached, even if there's nothing to impeach him for. They'll gin it up, or they will exaggerate any charges that Mueller brings. And then that will present a very interesting situation. It goes to the United States Senate for trial, and the Republicans, even if they don't control the Senate, you need 67 votes, two-thirds of the Senate, to remove. Well, let's say the Senate is exactly as it is today with 52 Republicans. You would need all the Democrats plus about, I haven't calculated, 19 or 20
about 15.
Republicans.
Like
yes,
15 Republicans.
If it's as it is today, they would need more.
You only have
49 Democrats. You need 67. You need about 18 Republicans.
Right.
The question is, would they get those 18 Republicans? Now, if the charges against the president were very serious, they could. But also, he's not a very popular figure in his own party, as was Nixon. Nixon was not popular in the Republican Party. And they may say, what the hell? I'd much rather have Mike Spence. And in that case, there would be a committee. The standard delegation would be sent over by Mitch McConnell to the White House, exactly, by the way, what happened with Nixon. And they would say, Mr. President, you cannot survive. And we think it's a wiser idea to resign before the trial so that you're not the first president in American history to be removed. That can happen. And they would have to say your support in your own party has eroded. That can happen. And then we would have to see what he would do. Now, that is speculative history. I don't think it's going to go that far. Really don't. I don't think they have enough on him. And I think that the American people would become very resistant to the idea of impeaching Trump. They did not like the idea of impeaching Clinton. It hurt the Republican Party. But let's see what happens. You know, we don't know what's going to... Go ahead.
That's right, we don't. And I would also argue... I would argue a different point of view also here, that if in fact the Democrats take over the House, it'll be with Democrats who are basically running away from this impeachment issue.
Yeah.
They're not really talking about that. So I agree with you that I think the Black Congressional Caucus would want, and they're going to probably have many committee leaderships because of their seniority, and they're going to try to push impeachment, but I don't know how you get impeachment through the House unless you have some very tough articles and some evidence, and I haven't seen any of that, so it could all backfire or blow up in their faces, which means they would lose the House in 2020. So I don't know what's going to happen, but I just don't think that all this impeachment talk, I just don't think there's enough, that there's any wrongdoing that I've seen. And we don't even know what Mueller has. And look, Mueller may not even he may not even win the Manafort case, Bill. If he loses that, I don't know what he does, Bill.
Well, he doesn't seem to have any evidence against Trump. I mean, they're trying to get Trump to appear at a deposition, an interview with Mueller, and they can't seem to agree on terms. I don't know. I don't know where he goes. I mean, some people are arguing that Trump should fire Mueller, which he actually has the authority to do.
Mm-hmm,
but then
sure.
People are afraid of a backlash, that it will look like a cover-up. And it probably would. But, you know, if you fire Mueller, there's no more general counsel. And Trump just goes on because I don't know where. Now, if the Democrats take over, they can on their own. You don't need the general counsel. They can on their own draw up articles of impeachment. They can do it anytime they want.
Sure.
The House is empowered to do that. So I do believe that if the Democrats take over, that is what will be done.
Well, and I'm sure President Trump is reminding the voters of that as he goes around the country, Bill.
Yes, and I think that what would happen would be if in fact the president was impeached by the House, you are quite right in saying that many of the Democrats are running as if they were Republicans, but there's a mystical thing that occurs when Democrats get on the plane to Washington. I don't know over what state the air changes, but they suddenly become pets of Nancy Pelosi. And suddenly they find, I have found in the flight to Washington, impeachable offenses. They were under the airline seat. I didn't realize they were there. And suddenly they vote more in sorrow than in anger to impeach the president to get along with their own party. Because within the Democratic Party, if you go to Washington, you better go along. And you better go along with the Congressional Black Caucus or they can really hurt you. In committee assignments, you don't get the right committees, you're going to look pretty minor. So it could be a very, very, very bitter time coming up in American politics, a really bitter time.
That's right. Let's get back to this topic of the media and these editorials that they're going to be writing. I guess they're all going to get together and maybe, if not write the same editorial, write something similar, right, Bill? They're all going to say that Mr. Trump should stop picking on the media, but I don't see that affecting President Trump or his base, because most of the base doesn't like the media anyway.
That's
so the people the people who are probably going to get really excited about these editorials are people who are not voting for Trump anyway. This is what I think is the problem, that people don't understand, that it seems like the people attacking President Trump are the people who are not voting for him anyway. So
that's
he's not.
Exactly
they don't seem to be. They're not gaining in numbers. That's what I'm trying to say, Bill.
That's exactly right. I don't know how many newspapers will go along with this. I think it is very foolish. Newspapers should maintain complete independence, one from the other. It is. You know, there is an element that absolutely despises Trump. And if you go back to Watergate, we had the very similar situation, and everything is a crisis. Everything is a constitutional crisis. This is the worst constitutional crisis in American history. The attacks on the press in Watergate, it is the worst constitutional crisis in our country's history. And as somebody said at the time, worse than the Civil War. You know, I mean, it's everything is the worst. The Iraq War, the worst foreign policy decision in American history. Worse than our lack of preparation for World War II? I don't think so. But that is what we're getting now. It's maximalist journalism, maximalist politics, and a lot of it is coming from universities that if they have a chance to remove Trump, this is our moment to shine. This is our moment to restore the Constitution. What did he ever do to the Constitution? Nothing. I mean, absolutely nothing. They convince themselves that they're national heroes, that they are the only thing that stands between the destruction of the Constitution and a great future for America. Well, they're wrong. I think the public will respond badly to the press ganging up on the president, especially since the press will then be in a position of basically bragging about itself. And, you know, people don't like that because Trump has never questioned or attack the constitutionality of the press or the importance of the press. What he says is it publishes a lot of fake news. What the people will be reminded of is the fact that Barack Obama had reporters tailed. Several reporters were put in prison during the Obama administration, much worse than anything Trump has ever done. But he was Barack. He came to save us. And so he can't be criticized. So it's going to be a very rough period. The, you know, many people will say, oh, I've never seen an atmosphere as poisonous as Washington today. Well, I have, and it was the late 60s. It was every bit as poisonous as today. And, in fact, one can even say it was more poisonous because we were at war. Mm-hmm. And American soldiers were dying while all this was going on in Washington. So we've gone through this many times before. We've gone through periods where I like to tell the story. Well, I don't like to tell it, but it's because it's a sad story. But on April 12, 1945, my father, who was involved in war production, was on a train, on a passenger train from one city to another, and the conductor came through and said, may I have your attention, please? I regret to inform you that the President of the United States, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, has died. And my father said, half the car burst into applause. I mean, if you
I remember that. I remember that story. I think you said that story one time. That is a remarkable, especially a man who had been elected four times, Bill.
Yes. And was the leader of a victorious military that was victorious around the world. He died in April of 1945, just a few months before the surrender of Germany, a few more months before the surrender of Japan. It's very sad that he didn't live to see either. But, I mean, he had led this country to victory, and yet half the car applauded. If they didn't like him politically or didn't like his views, that's fine. But I have never seen a demonstration like that. But he was loved and hated. So we've
that's
gone
right.
through this before.
Yes, and I think, you know, from my own reading of that time period, there were many, many people who thought he knew about Pearl Harbor and let it happen. I mean, which I've always been skeptical of that because I've always felt that that is really going too far. But apparently I was looking at the news that there's going to be 100-plus newspapers who are going to have a coordinated editorial, I guess. Maybe they're probably not all going to reprint the same editorial, but they're going to basically come out. My sense is that most of these newspapers are going to be anti-Trump newspapers, and I don't think they're going to pick up a lot of support, Bill, because, I'm beginning to wonder how influential the media even is anymore.
Go ahead.
I mean, I'm just going to say, I just look at our own Dallas Morning News here who endorsed Hillary Clinton the last time around after they had endorsed every Republican going back, I think, to Wilkie. And that newspaper is every week shrinking and shrinking in terms of actual readership and everything else. So, I mean, other newspapers the same. I think a lot of Americans are not even getting newspapers anymore, Bill.
I think that's true. First of all, they can get so much online. And I think also the newspapers, I don't think, are reporting and reflecting their constituents and their readers. I think there is one reporter who I think stands out above all as one who does, and that's Selena Zito, who actually goes out and talks to people. But most of them don't seem to really particularly even care. I think they have contempt for their readers. I think this is part of the reflection of the age of the college graduate, where many of them went to schools and looked down on the American people. And I think people detect that. I think they sense it, and which is what you may be getting now. So,
I just don't think they have the same influence. I mean, I just feel that they have influence, of course. But I don't see them changing that many votes, I guess. I don't think that they're going to, let's say, win it for the Democrats. They're going to try to, but I don't think on their own they can do it. That's just my feeling, Bill. I just don't believe they have that much power. Could be wrong, though.
I think you're right. Well, you know, historically, it's interesting, if you break it down, that the power of a newspaper to influence was not and has never been on the editorial pages. Editorial pages tend to reinforce opinions that are already there. I have very rarely have you heard of or have I ever spoken to an individual said, well, I was for Jones, and then I read the editorial in the Daily Bugle, and after contemplating the editorial, I switched to Mr. Podunk. How often have you ever heard that? People usually read editorials in their favorite paper to reinforce their favorite opinion. And,
right.
And where it was influential in the past was on the news pages. And it was pointed out that in 1936, when President Roosevelt ran for re-election, virtually every major paper in the country endorsed his opponent because the papers were owned by Republicans. It was basically a Republican industry, but the reporters were mostly Democrats. So on the news pages, you had a kind of slant toward the Democratic Party. On the editorial pages, a slant toward the Republican Party. Overwhelmingly, people got their news from newspapers. Radio was a factor and a growing factor, but it was the newspaper that dominated, and there the news coverage did probably have an effect. But today, you have so many different sources of news. Most people get their news from television, and even today, many get it from other sources on the Internet. There are alternative sources. The 24-hour news cycle, I don't think, has all that much influence, because if you look at it, most of the shows are discussion shows, and they're not really presenting anything that, of any great value, in my humble opinion. And I think you're right. I think that people are making their own independent decisions, and those decisions are being affected in part at their revulsion toward a press that refuses to reflect their values or their experience.
I think you're right, and I just don't think they have as much influence as they think they do. But looking ahead at next week, Bill, there's a story that broke here in the last day regarding Keith Ellison, who may be facing some personal accusations. Obviously, he's up in Minnesota. But do you think this is a story that could be important next week, Bill?
I don't know. This is hard to judge because immediately the issues of race come up. He's an African American, and the press is very reluctant. The feminist movement, which has turned into a farce on this issue, has not reacted to anything that's come out so far, which are charges by his son, and I don't know if that's a natural son or an adopted son, against him that he abused this individual's mother. It's awfully hard to say whether the press will go with it, whether they'll feel there's enough evidence to go with it, and whether they want to go with it. Again,
right.
It would mean taking on a Democrat, taking on a black Democrat. The press has reported on corruption, you know, involving black Democrats, but it tends to be a one-day story. So I don't know. Now, he is the second highest-ranking official in the Democratic Party. He's not unimportant, and he is running to be Attorney General of Minnesota. And he is resigning from Congress, actually. He's a U.S. congressman, resigning to run for Attorney General of Minnesota. I would imagine that this story would have to have some impact in his home state, in his campaign. I mean, it's going to come up. It's going to be brought up by his opponent, that's for sure. Nationally, I don't know if it'll be a big story.
Well, nationally, maybe not as much, but I think you're right, because I saw something that his Democrat opponents they're sort of using the standard they used against the senator who resigned and so on.
Franken,
so that Franken. So it may hurt him in that sense, but we'll have to keep an eye on it. As you look at next week, Bill, what are some of the stories that you'll be following this coming week?
Well, you know, it is August, and this is considered the slowest news month of the year. It's also the month that the psychiatrists go on vacation, so I don't know how much news there'll be out of Washington. But there are the continuing campaigns, obviously, because we're moving toward Labor Day, which is only now in about 3 weeks, and that's when the campaigns will begin in earnest. That's a factor. We should look overseas for stories that are building. There is a great deal of tension between Israel and the Hamas forces in Gaza, which can explode at any moment. We should also look at actions involving possible confrontations between American naval ships in the Pacific and the Chinese Navy, which occurred this week. We should look at the fact that Iran, this is becoming a big story again and a fascinating one, because our European allies aren't giving us any help. In fact, they're trying to undercut us in the president's attempts to make Iran more accountable for its nuclear program. We are not getting help from our own allies, and this may affect our foreign policy down the line. All those stories, you know, you might, if you read Urgent Agenda, it's been very hard in the last week to find really meaty stories. you find really continuing stories or stories that use, as we call it, the second day angle, trying to take a story and just kind of extend it. In the old days of journalism, newspapers during July and August would gin up crime waves. If one a crime was committed, crime wave here in Gotham City, read all about it. Terrible, terrible, don't walk the streets. And then when you actually look at it, you realize there's been no rise in crime at all. But it's a weak news period. You're going to see that kind of journalism, small stories made into large stories. There was a story about a Democratic candidate for Congress in Minnesota divorcing her brother. Apparently she married her brother. It's something you don't want to go into. You don't want to know too much about it. But that's you get the dog bites, the man bites dog stories. So I don't know.
Yeah.
We'll see what turns up.
Well, one thing that you were talking about Iran, you were talking about these other foreign policy problems, that is, or China, that is the one thing you can never really get away from when you're president.
Yeah.
These foreign policy problems. So, I mean, I'm very concerned about China. I'm very concerned about Iran. Iran is getting very desperate, the leadership, that is, and they may, you know, they may want to play the nationalism card and get into a war somewhere just to distract the public. So you can never get away from these foreign policy issues, and I guess that's why we check Urgent Agenda, because that's one part of that you do very well, Bill, and that's provide us with analysis and coverage of foreign policy events. That's one of my favorite parts about Urgent Agenda, as well as your humor, Bill. You have a great sense of humor. We know that from chatting with you every Sunday.
Well, we try to keep it, you know, the theme of Urgent Agenda is cheerful resistance. You have to try to have a sense of humor looking at the actual world.
I think we may have some news next week when we talk on Sunday. A couple of things that I think could happen next week, Bill, that we could be talking about Sunday or next Sunday, and that is DACA could be shut down by a judge here in Texas. That could really be big news. And the elections in Minnesota, everybody I talk to up there tells me there are surprises that day. So we'll see what happens. That could be a very interesting night in Minnesota.
It can be, because Minnesota is beginning to move slightly right. And
yes.
There is a very complex issue in Minnesota involving Muslim communities and some of the candidates they're putting up. It's a delicate issue to discuss. And they have a Democratic Party up there that is really, I mean, it's in need of, they should rush immediately to the Mayo Clinic, which is in Minnesota, and go to the psychiatry department and figure out what's wrong.
Well, Hubert Humphrey, where are you? That's what that party needs up there. Somebody like Humphrey who could be a populist, but at the same time make some sense.
Yes.
What they have up there, some crazy, crazy Democrats. Well, Bill, as always, thank you for your time. It's always a great honor to chat with you, and we'll just do it again next week.
I look forward to it.
Thank you so much. Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Always have a lot of fun chatting with Bill, and we did tonight as well. Lots of big issues, a lot of things happening. A lot of things happening in the news, and I'm glad that Bill mentioned at the end there the potential incidents with China, where, you know, we could be having some, I wouldn't say a war, but there could be some tension there between China and the United States, and that could be very, very interesting. Have a wonderful day, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and we'll talk to you later.